Hello, good afternoon.
Buenos días, camarada.
Muchas gracias. Buenos días a ti también. So,
Oh,
good.
wait, let me say, ¿cómo usted? Usted, I mean, ¿cómo está usted?
Muy bien, ¿y tú?
Estoy bien, I think.
Yeah, wonderful.
See, I always forget it if you use soy or estoy for. It's
Oh, yeah.
been a while.
So thanks for giving us the interview. And yeah, before we begin, one question that has often come to my mind. How do you pronounce your nick?
Oh, you wouldn't believe how often I've been asked that. I've always pronounced it as Teyev.
Tev.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the AI grouping, if you're doing the Latin thing, would be an I. So a lot of people have said Tiv, Teyev, stuff like that. But I don't know. I just put it together years ago and stuck with it.
Fair enough. So, for anyone who doesn't know, you are a regular of politics. I mean, I would imagine everyone who listens to this will know that much. And you run one of the utility bots on politics, which is mostly known for the quote function.
For code function, yes.
Yeah. So that's pretty handy to have around, although it often gets used for evil as well as good, so to speak.
People say a lot because I don't update the bot, but a lot of that is because when I first started out with the bot, I had a lot of features. And then somebody who shall remain nameless decided to steal those features. And they did a better job with it, so I said, if you can do a better job, then you can have them.
Fair enough. Do you think that you will improve this bot or change the code base in some way? Maybe use a different bot at some point, or?
Actually, yes, I was looking into, there was another, it wasn't Egg Drop, started with a B, it was an easier programming language than TCL.
Yeah, TCL is a bit obscure, perhaps.
Well, that and the books I've got on TCL, they start with basic stuff like how to do a Hello World program where, there's no specific how to make your crappy egg bot better.
Yeah, it doesn't help a lot to do a Hello World program when you're trying to change a bot, right?
Oh yeah, I am. I was actually surprised at how well the quote database took off with the bot. I just added that as an afterthought, never thought it would be used.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's one of the most used functions of your bot, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd have to say that.
And did you envision it as being used, so to speak, to quote interesting stuff or to quote like mostly happens, sort of funny, embarrassing shit we say out of context?
Little from column A and little column from B, but originally I intended it just to be, a utility bot to assist people in any small way, look up Google or Wikipedia without having to, just any small way I could help the channel.
Right. So, how do you find politics as a channel, and how did you come to know about it? Obviously, you've been a regular for a long time now, but if you remember how you heard of us.
And here I thought, I have found the promised land because I had spent time in the darkness and the purgatory that is FNET's politics.
I see. Many people talk very badly of that place.
Well, it's about the same, number of chatters in that. It's just that all of the ops are either moderate Republican or they've drank the Kool-Aid in their Tea Party, and the laws of the channel aren't applied equally. I mean, I can tell you, they just bash Democrats and Obama all day long. And I said, I called the Tea Party tea baggers once, and I got a 24-hour ban for that.
Right, yeah. So you think that we do a bit better at that?
Yeah, and the other thing that really bothered me is several people actually attacked my service in the United States Army, said that there was no way I could have served because if I had served, I'd be a conservative wanting to bomb every third world country and wipe them off the map.
I see.
There are liberals and there are atheists in the army.
Right. So, in that regard, you get along better at Freenode politics then?
Yes, I'd have to say I like it a lot better. I especially like the Appeals channel.
Right, yeah. you think yeah, that's a good thing to have?
I think it's an excellent, you know, since I've taken over medicine, it was one of the first things that I implemented was an Appeals channel, even though we don't get the same traffic, but I want the same, you know, good things in place that I think politics have made.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a reasonable way to at least give people the opportunity to contest their bans and to play, to say their, have their say and tell their side of the story, so to speak, right?
Yes, and it doesn't help that I always loved the law, so that the idea of an appeals court of politics, that's
fair
appeals
enough.
To me. The appeals, they appeal to me.
So, what can you tell us about the channel that you think could or should be improved?
That's a good question. I don't really have, without going into specifics, I have had some conflict with a couple of the ops that
yeah.
I think sometimes allow personal feelings to influence their actions. I think that, like police force or government, that you need an agency above them to investigate them, to make sure that they follow the rules. When you're given more power over regular people, that comes with more responsibility. And I think some people take that lightly.
I see. So you think that we need some kind of mechanism to make the ops more accountable?
Well, ideally that would be the channel owner, but in my personal experiences and appeals and that, he basically goes along with the flow. Don't
right.
get me wrong, he's a great guy, I like him, I like his politics, it's just, you know, he's got things to do, and sometimes the appeals that go up to him get backlogged, and I guess that's just like the real Supreme Court or European Court of Human Rights.
Yeah, justice can be very slow.
What's the saying, justice delayed is justice denied?
Yeah, that's the saying indeed. But all too often, it is delayed nonetheless, right?
Sometimes. I mean, very rarely have I seen anything that had to go all the way up to, you know, the chain of command. There's no constitutional conventions for politics, but other, you know, you asked me, and that's the only thing I could think of. Otherwise, I really like politics, and
right.
I've been to several different servers. Like I said, FNet being the worst, and I said I'd rank this up here with the best.
Right, thanks for your opinion. So, going on to politics itself, since this is a politics channel and all, can you briefly describe your political views?
Well, actually, I wanted to say, from listening to the interview with Queenie, her hearing her politics, I was saying, oh my god, get out of my brain, you're stealing my political identity. I would say I'm a social democrat, although because we only have a two-party system here. Although we do have a social democrat party,
mm-hmm.
but they're not social democrats. They're actually democratic socialists, which is like completely different. Social democrats believe in reforming the free market system with regulation and nationalization of a few key industries, whereas democratic socialists believe in reforming socialism with some free market ideas. And they're masquerading themselves as social democrats here, but it doesn't really matter anyway, because I think maybe they got like 1,000 people in the country.
Mm-hmm.
The most successful third-party candidate I think we had was Ralph Nader, and he only got 2-3% of the vote.
Yeah, which isn't much.
Yeah, I really don't like the first-past-the-post system that we get here. You always end up with, I mean, look at President Obama. He won with, what, 50 or 51% of the vote?
Very tight, yes.
Yeah, it leaves a lot of pissed off people on the other side that believe they got cheated and They just won't accept that they lost.
Do you think that the electoral reform is an important issue then in U.S. politics? Do you think that it's necessary to somehow reform the electoral system in order to get other things done?
Oh, absolutely. One of the initiatives in Ohio, this came about from the 2004 election. We had switched to the dibulb electronic voting machines,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of people liked because they were very simple to use. The new voters and the elderly could use them, but they were terribly insecure. And after the 2004 election, the server that was supposed to be inside Ohio to count our votes mysteriously crashed. So these votes went to a private company in Tennessee who the owner of this company had made several large contributions to the Bush campaign. And wouldn't you know it, Ohio went for Bush in 2004 by less than, I think, 0.5%.
That's rather dodgy.
So after that, there was a groundswell of opposition to get rid of these electronic voting machines. And I was glad I was on the ground floor. We were going door to doors, and we got the number of signatures for the petitions in Ohio. If you get enough petition signatures, your issue must go on the next general election ballot. And we got it on there, and it passed, and they removed the electronic voting machines, and now we all have, we're back to the paper ballots that
right.
actually leave, you know, a trail. And although usually I'm totally against, I'm for the United Nations, but I don't like having some of their, you know, inside the United States, but I'd be totally for inviting United Nations election monitors all over the United States to monitor, because the places that do monitor usually give us a very high rating for being free from corruption, and I think if that's true, then we shouldn't have any problem showing the world how free our elections are.
Right. But you think there would be no problem in principle in having your elections monitored?
For me, no, but there have been several people in the last coming election, a sheriff from Texas said that he would call out the National Guard to fight Obama's United Nations minions if they tried to invade his election.
Right.
Those are almost, if I misquoted, it's a the or an of. I mean, it was right on what he said, that he'd have to call out the National Guard to stop Obama and his United Nation minions. I mean, some people are really... may I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Have you ever been to the United States, specifically the southern parts of the United States?
No, I have never been to the U.S. at all.
Oh, well, the southern parts, at least, I would say I envy you, because in some parts, they are literally still fighting the Civil War.
Right.
I mean, I could say I'm a Civil War reenactor. We go out every season, and we dress up like Union troops and that. And I think that's important. I could be proud of what we did. 250,000 Northerners died to put slavery dead forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the people that in the South, like on several state house capitals, they have the Confederate Stars and Bars flag flying there right next to the United States flag. And I think that's sickening.
Right.
And they celebrate some of the worst aspects and atrocities. It's just, if you go south and once they hear your accent, because we can tell, you know, what part of the country you're from, they'll call us damn Yankees. And without question, somebody will bring up the fact that General Sherman was from Ohio, and if we're in Georgia, they'll say, he burnt my great-grandpappy's barn.
So, do you think states should have the right to secede, as some states think?
Constitutionally, I don't see any mechanism in the laws or the precedents to allow secession. There was the first, I think, was the South Carolina nullification crisis. There was a tariff that was benefiting the North. South Carolina said that all of a sudden they had the right to nullify federal law. And Andrew Jackson's response was, I'll hang them.
Right.
So, I want to say that if there something were to happen and the United States were to change and grow despotic, I believe secession could be legally defined under the part where it says that we have the right and responsibility to overthrow a corrupt government. But just to leave the United States because you don't like gay marriage being passed in your neighboring state or Medicaid requirements through Obamacare, no, that's illegal and it should be put down.
Right, so it's illegal and it shouldn't be legal, according to you, right? If you could change the law to make it legal, you wouldn't.
No, I would keep that the only reason secession should even be thought of is if the United States had suspended elections and granted dictatorial powers to one person. And that, in fact, in our Constitution, it demands that we overthrow the government.
Mm-hmm.
But that it also raises another question with the Second Amendment issues. I mean, legally, I own firearms, mm-hmm. and I'm for responsible ownership of firearms, but the way we have it is a joke. When you hear Republicans saying that we don't need more gun control laws, it's a blatant lie. There's a huge loophole. It's called the gun show loophole. Every Sunday in a place called Niles, they have a gun show. You walk in with your ID and cash, and they will sell you whatever firearm and however many rounds. I mean, I can walk in and say, yes, I want this M2 50 caliber machine gun. I want 2,000 rounds of armor-piercing bullets, please. Here's my ID and the cash. And, oh, let me take this Glock 19 with the 17-round clip and the hair trigger. And let me get some of those bullets that penetrate vests.
Right.
And they'll say, here you go, here's your change, and you walk right out with it. No background check, nothing.
Do they keep records?
They keep a record of the transaction at the vendor.
Right.
It doesn't go on to the government unless the government asks. So the only reason they would ask is if that gun turned up with, you know, in some kind of crime.
Then yeah, so after something has already happened.
The vendors are required to keep it, but they're not required to send a report on to the FBI, the ones that do the background checks, unless they're specifically asked by name or by serial number of the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I own one shotgun and two revolvers. The revolvers are 6 shots, the shotgun holds 7. That's all I really need for home defense or for hunting. I do not need a 30-round clip,
right.
You know, fully automatics and stuff like that. It's
so you think these weapons should be more regulated than they are at present?
Well, that's the problem. The Second Amendment is very clearly worded. It shall not be infringed. And later on, it says that any of the first 10 amendments cannot be repealed or changed.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get rid of this if our entire legal system is based off the Constitution and the precedents come down from the legal rulings? How can we legally change this without calling a new constitutional convention, which has never been done?
Yeah.
I mean, it's baffling. I can't even see a theoretical... I can't see one way out of this. There's no mention in it about... have you ever heard of a smart gun? They have guns now that they come with little rings that have an RFID transponder.
Right.
Unless you have your gun with your ring in contact, that gun will not fire.
Right.
And these rings are cheap, and they can be made secure. And there's nothing in there that says we can't mandate that anyone that owns a weapon has to have a smart weapon.
Right, so you think this might be a way forward?
It might be a way to reduce the gun violence without violating the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, or regulating ammunition, because there's no mention of that either,
mm-hmm.
I don't see how we could ban weapons. And any politician that tried, it would be political suicide. The NRA has a massive war chest and huge chapters in every state. When Kerry ran for president in 2004, the NRA actually took out the entire front page of every newspaper in Ohio. Huge front, whole page of the front page I forget what, you know, what it said, but, you know, it was negative against Kerry.
Yeah. So what's your views about the Democratic Party, since you were saying that you don't really have a Social Democratic Party?
I vote with the Democratic Party because I don't have a party that fits me any better. If I had my wish, I would vote for a Dennis Kucinich, Ralph Nader ticket.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a registered Democrat because it allows me to vote in the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I would say I still do support President Obama. I wish that there are some things that he said he was going to do that he has not. And in a way, some of that is not his fault. He's not a dictator. He cannot tell Congress, do what I say, or I will put you and your family up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, and I think this is actually a dangerous situation. The bipartisanship in Congress is getting so worse that I fear that the legislative branch of this government may grind to a halt. Our whole entire system of government is set up that all three branches must function together. And if the legislative system collapses, and right now public opinion polls of Congress are running between 9% and 12%, one actually showed that the Communist Party of America, if they reformed, would have a higher approval rating than Congress does right now.
Right.
It could lead to the dissolution of the union if the government can't function. But I see it more likely that, and I'm hoping that the Tea Party will fracture and cause the Republican Party to turn into two smaller parties, like, say, having the Democratic Party, the Tea Party, and the Conservative Party.
Do you think that's likely, then?
It could be. I think that it depends who wins the struggle for control. Right now, the Tea Party, the Republicans were content to let the Tea Party basically run things during the midterm elections. And when the last elections came up, because of this, they lost big time. Two Senate seats that they should have won were lost because the Tea Party ran morons. It said there was no such thing as rape, or that God approves of rape, or that women don't get pregnant from rape.
Right.
So I think that, and now the whole thing with Karl Rove and the Tea Party, if one side can't conquer the other, I believe then they'll split. And I really hope that, so if they split, then maybe the Democrats can regain a supermajority, but that still doesn't help us, because even when we had control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, we still were barely able to get anything done.
So why is that?
Our party is fractious. The Republicans, for all their faults, they are very good at closing ranks and voting together. Democrats, you know, we just don't seem to be able to coalesce into a powerful political group when we are in power. When the Democrats are, I mean, minority, they are very good at filibustering, procedural moves, a solid blue wall of jackasses, you know, because that's the Democratic Party icon,
right.
Yes. But hand this power and, you know, everybody runs off, you know, like chickens with their heads cut off.
Mm-hmm. So no party discipline?
Yeah, pretty much. Although, you know, unlike the Republic, we have several smaller parties, like, that are almost absorbed, that they caucus. We actually have a senator who's a socialist,
mm-hmm,
from Vermont. He caucuses with the Democrats. There's a party that's, you know, pretty big in Minnesota and Wisconsin called the Democratic Farmers, or some, the Farmer Democrats.
Right.
They caucus with the Democrats, so we, you know. And then we've got Democrats from swing states. They have to be careful of the NRA, and they can't come out too far on gay rights because,
mm-hmm,
like, Ohio is a very political, important state. And, well, I mean, when it comes to the election, everybody comes here because we're the kingmaker.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also very, very split down the middle. The last four or five presidential elections have all been 51 to 49% either way, you know. And with that, all the little local issues, you know, that should never be on the national news, they're covered all over the place, and you've got somebody from here with all the attention on them. Maybe this guy, he really does support gay marriage, but he knows that if he comes out in support of it, it might harm the bigger Democratic interests in the national race.
Right.
Because of all the focus on Ohio, so he can't say. And I'm ashamed to say that in 2004, Ohio voted to ban gay marriage. We currently have an appeal in the courts that I hope will overturn the ban. But likewise, again, with the ban, I think it passed with like 54%. So I'm glad that at least almost half of the state was just as appalled as I was with this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, once when I was in high school, before I'd really gotten into politics, there was this poor guy there, I forget his name, and he was gay. And the kids there would just mercilessly attack him and beat him. And one day I couldn't stand for it because I saw this guy named Derek Fenster. He was walking down the steps, and this kid was walking up. Without saying a word, he just pushed his hand out to the other guy's face and pushed him down the steps. I mean, like 10, 12 flights. Dude was all bloodied and messed up, and I screamed and I said that, you know, you could have killed him. And he said, so, what's your problem with it? Are you gay too? And I think that was really, that's when I realized that somebody needs to stand up for, I mean, I don't turn on TV and say, oh, look, there's a naked man. That's hot. But I fully support gay rights, transgendered rights, the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. I mean, I'm not a man of very much financial means. I live on a fixed pension from disability in the Army. But I make it a point to donate more than enough to get my membership in these two organizations because I believe that they do a lot of good. They're able to stand with these people when I am not able to be there to do so myself.
Right. What would you say are the most urgent political issues in the U.S. or the world right now?
I'll start with the U.S. since it's a somewhat smaller, although we like to think that we're bigger than the world. Political fracturedness, I think a lot of people, and these are extremists, they keep saying that that civil war is going to happen, and the helter-skelter freaks that say there's going to be a race war, and I don't see that happening, but I do see bad things happening if we can't end this non-bipartisan lockup of the legislature.
Right.
It has to be able to function. The government must be able to compromise. This whole thing, either we get everything we want or we burn the government down around us and claim a Pyrrhic victory, it can't go on. It has to inevitably, either the government's going to fall apart or they're going to learn to work together again.
Right.
I really hope that they can work together again, because if the U.S. fell apart, it would be a nightmare globally, you know, for, you know, strategic reasons. And I mean, think about it. What if a state like Alabama got part of our nuclear weapons arsenal? I mean, next day they say that God has commanded them to, if you don't put all your gays in re-education camps, we'll strike them down with the fiery hand of God.
Yeah, it's not a very comfortable thought.
Yeah, exactly. On the global scene, I'd like to make a special mention of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I studied Russians and that when I was in the military. I always had a fascination with the Soviet Union when I was growing up because it was some far-off, forbidden place like Mordor in Lord of the Rings. you know, I'd look at these maps, and there would be Western Europe and parts of Central Europe, and then it would just go blank. There would be nothing beyond this iron wall, or, you know.
Yeah.
And I always said that I wanted to learn, you know, what's going on in this secret land, and I cannot tell you how much sympathy I have for the Russian people, for what they've endured. And now, I mean, think about it, the years of brutal oppression under the czars. I think it was Alexander II. He was going to free the serfs, and then a terrorist group, something Narodnia, Strength of the People,
Sila
Narodnia, they blew him up before he could transfer his powers. His son then, therefore, gets all of the dictatorial powers, and he says, "Put, like, I'm going to do that." So in comes the Russian Revolution, which could have been a great thing, a wonderful thing. And I think had Lenin not suffered a stroke, it would have turned out very differently. But with his stroke, he was unable to stop Stalin from coming to rise. And I know we differ on this, but I think we can both agree that the Russians did suffer horribly under World War II.
Definitely.
And so finally, communism collapses, revolution, people are in the streets, hooray, hooray. And the next thing you know, there's tanks firing on the Duma. And they get their president, and now they've got Putin, and they get electoral fraud. I mean, massive, massive electoral fraud. There were just hundreds of videos on YouTube of all the stuff they were doing. In pens that had ink that would disappear within 5 minutes. This other guy, he took a camera, and he climbed up to the top of this building, next to the building that the polling was going on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
He jumped over to that roof and went down the stairs where there was no security, and he filmed these election workers. They were getting the ballots, using some kind of eraser to wipe off this special ink, and then to remark United Russia Putin. And he yells down, "Hello, comrades, what do you think you're doing?" And they look up at him, and they're like, "Oh, shit, get him, get him, get him!" So, yeah, I feel really badly. That's just another symptom. I think the United Nations, or maybe a body to replace them, I think that they should have more power. Or like the European Union, I believe that they really need to strengthen the central or federal authority.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the European courts rule, all the European member nations say, "How high?" Not,
right.
"We're Brits, we're going to keep our own currency, and we're going to pick and choose what we do, and we're half in, half out."
I see.
I think, I don't know about the whole thing with Greece, but I think it's pretty clear that austerity isn't working, and Germany cannot simply just keep bailing them out. Something's got to be done, and I don't want to see them be kicked out. I want to see the European Union grow, along with the United Nations. I want to see us grow into big enough blocks that we can one day maybe unite together into a one-world government. And I know that I'll never be alive to see this, but imagine all the what we could prevent by having a one-world government. No more individual nations starving because of trade sanctions, or the people with the food don't like the people with the port that ships it to the people that are starving. And
right,
we could allocate all the resources of the planet to the people that need it, and maybe without all this huge defense budgets, because we're terrified of each other, we could put them to something useful, education, or pet project, space exploration.
I see.
I mean, with all, the Earth is going to be destroyed. It's inevitable. The sun will become a red giant, and it's going to, cook the Earth. We want to survive as a species. We need to fund our space program and expand.
Right. Okay, so we have talked a bit about the channel and about political issues, so What would you like to tell us about yourself?
I'm kind of an open book. People ask me questions, and I try to answer as honestly as possible. I'm 29 years old. I will be turning 30 July 5th, which I am not very happy about, but I think you may be able to appreciate that my birthday, July 5th, 1983, was the 40th anniversary of the Battle of Kursk.
Uh-huh.
Within the hour, you know, with the time zone differences, I was born within the hour of the battle taking place, starting. So 40 years to the hour I was born with the Battle of Kursk. I always thought that was kind of, you know, neat. Maybe it had something to do with me growing up to find Russia and the Soviet Union and history so fascinating.
Right.
Maybe it was just a freak coincidence, but something interesting. I was a very good student, going up through elementary and middle school. But when I got to high school, I was living with my mother at this time instead of with my grandparents. And things got pretty bad. I stopped going to school because it's hard to go to school when your mother comes home at 2, 3 in the morning drunk with 3 or 4 friends. And it's either going to be throw you out of your room so they can use the computer, or maybe my mother just came home alone drunk and she's depressed and wants to make herself feel better by beating me with the hockey stick or with a belt. So eventually I just stopped going, and because I grew a beard earlier than my friends, I was able to get a job in a factory, a textile factory.
Mm-hmm.
And at age 15, I applied to become an emancipated miner, and I moved out. At 15, I was working full-time as a union textile maker and had my own apartment. I should have, I wish I hadn't. It would have made, getting a scholarship for higher education easier. But this went on for a while, and eventually I realized that manual labor was not for me. It was unfulfilling. It was
right.
Not challenging at all whatsoever, and you have to really bust your ass to just make the basics. So I went and I took the GED exam, and, I didn't worry about passing it, but I got a letter in the mail saying that I had one of the highest scores in Ohio, and Youngstown State University would be very eager for me to come, or, well, actually to have someone come out to talk to me. I was like, wow. So, I got into Youngstown State University. I originally was a computer science major, which presented a problem because I had dropped out in the 9th grade. I had never really taken algebra, geometry, trigonometry, and computer science is very heavy in math. And
yeah.
Lowest course they had to offer was pre-calculus.
Right, so it assumed a lot of things that you hadn't done before.
Yeah, so I only had several weeks to master algebra, trig, and geometry. I was spending, they had something called the Mathematics Assistance Center, the MAC. I was spending 10 hours a day there, and I did it. And I have to say that pre-calc and calculus became some of my more favorite subjects, because any of the other subjects, sociology, psychology, history, because of, being able to read a page once and remember it, wasn't very challenging. I didn't even really have to go to class all that often. I just get an A because I remembered. But mathematics, you can't remember, the answers to different equations. You have to work them out.
Yeah.
Worked a problem, and that's I liked it because it was it challenged me. It wasn't just a simple recall of memory, but I decided that I just loved psychology, and that was my second choice. I loved the law, but I had gotten into trouble, and I had a misdemeanor criminal offense, and that forever bars me from being on the bar.
Right.
So one small mistake that I made 3 months after turning 18 completely destroyed part of the life that I wanted to have. And no matter what I do, I can never, ever get that. I mean, I can get it expunged, but that's still not good enough for the state bar.
Right.
Can never do what I love. And so I said, I love psychology, you know, just a little bit less, but I still love it. And I signed up for the ROTC program because I'd always wanted to be a soldier, and all the members of my family had been soldiers, and I was raised hearing about all the different places that they'd gone and the things that they'd seen and the funny stories, and I kind of did think it was my duty. My family had all served, going back as far as the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I could have lived with myself if I had not continued that transition, and I really did love it. I mean, I finished ROTC, I graduated with the Bachelor's of Psychology, I was deployed to the Army's 4th Psychological Operations Group Airborne, and you go to something called A-School, or Advanced Individual Training, and that's where they basically tell you, you have a choice, you can either become a PSY operator, or you can become an interrogator.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't think I can become an interrogator, I'm against these whole military commissions, and I couldn't inflict pain on somebody like that. So I got into psychological operations, and, you know, because of my high ASVAB scores and interest in military intelligence, I got made a liaison officer to the United States Intelligence and Security Command. And, you know, it sounds bigger than it is, but, I mean, all we really did was write reports about Soviet training methods, because the Soviet Union may be gone, but a lot of these states that we're not so friendly with, their equipment is Soviet, their training and battle tactics are all Soviet-derived.
Right. So, and it still has some currency.
Yeah, and that, and a lot of it was historical for military history, CIA future trends. They wanted to get an idea of where the Russian military was going,
mm-hmm.
commanding what military outpost, what's his career been like, how likely is it that he'll be promoted, does he have any vices that could be exploited, you know, not that, that we did any of that, but we'd pass
right.
that information. I can give you, without going into too much detail, part of my where I was assigned to, they shipped out to Afghanistan, and I was supposed to join them, but I was at Fort Belvoir with the whole, you know, intelligence thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the operations that they did was they wanted a local politician to get elected, and it couldn't be seen that the Americans were supporting him, because this was an area that was not very friendly to the Americans.
Right, so it would have made it impossible to get him elected in that case.
No, we got him elected, but we had to do it differently. We couldn't couldn't overtly support him.
Yeah. Yes.
We covertly supported his enemy. We put out hundreds of pamphlets attacking the candidate that we wanted to win, and we made these attacks so vicious, so vile, that they offended. I mean, they really offended the local people, and when they read these, they said, how could this man say these horrible things about this man? This horrible man, he should not be elected. We'll elect the other guy, the guy that we wanted to win.
Right.
So by attacking the guy we wanted to win and making it look like it was coming from his opponent, it turned off everybody by the level of just vileness that in these attacks. Well, you know, I said it was a better way than just whacking the, you know, the other politician.
Yeah, sure.
But it was, and I hate to say it because I don't like the idea of subverting democracy, but the guy that was running against him, he was connected up the wazoo to the insurgents, and if he had been elected, he would have turned that entire town and area into a staging base. And eventually, we would have found out about it, and the airstrikes would have started coming down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I was able to, may if not justify, to soothe my conscience when I heard about it, because by doing this, we may have subverted their democratic process in one small bit, but they did get the better person, and they didn't get, you know, schwacked with a couple 2,000-pound JDAMs or drone strikes, because the other guy, who probably would have been elected, would have had the, you know, the what was left of the Taliban roll in, close the school for girls and all that, you know, wonderful stuff that they do. But I'm actually very thankful that PSYOPs are absolutely forbidden to apply our trade inside the United States. They can only be used outside, externally. And, I mean, it might not mean all if it's just a recommendation or a guideline, but it is actual U.S. law that says we may never do it on U.S. population.
Mm-hmm.
I found that comforting because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of the U.S. population are sheep. They, you know, think American idolatry, it's what I call American Idol, is the height of entertainment.
So you think these tactics would work well in the U.S. as well?
Extremely well. Especially considering how fractious the different areas of the countries are. You know, you know, one area, you just start saying, I hate gays. The other area, you know, I support marijuana. And,
yeah.
But the shame is although we may not, the CIA, I can't speak to that because I don't know anything, but the FBI has, in the past, their COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program, have in the past done this. They tried to bring down Martin Luther King. They tried to put together a porno of Martin Luther King having sex with a white woman.
Right.
They just tried everything to bring down any person that was against the Vietnam War, against the government, or against J. Edgar Hoover, who ran everything like he was a dictator.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of quick questions. What's your relation to Ireland?
My paternal grandfather was born there, and he was part of the Eastern 1916 uprising.
Mm-hmm.
Actually in Dublin, but there were several, you know, units of the IRA that attacked elsewhere. See, the decision to attack the GPO to start the Easter uprising, it wasn't completely popular. It didn't have 100% support
right.
in the Irish Republican Brotherhood and all that. So when it happened, a large part of those outside of Dublin just said, hell with it, we're not going to. But, you know, he didn't. He went, he fought, and he got caught. But they started releasing them in 1918, 1919. This is when, with Michael Collins training, the IRA began its guerrilla campaign and was eventually able to throw England out. And they signed the Free State Treaty.
Yeah.
A lot of IRA members, it was a big split. Half of the IRA joined the Free State. The other half, they became what was called the Anti-Treaty IRA. And although I support, in hindsight, the Free State, my grandfather did not. So he fought against the new Free State government of Ireland, and they were rounding them up. It was getting pretty bad. They were summarily executing each other. So eventually, when it came down to it, that his side was lost, and that when he got caught, if he wasn't killed, he was going to go to a prison camp. He hopped onto a freighter and came to the United States, and he changed their family name, which was McGowan, which means son of a Smith, to Smith, which is actually considered a Protestant name here.
Right.
So he went from an obvious Irish Catholic name to a Americanized Protestant name.
Right.
Which, I think it was pretty nifty of him, especially since McGowan means son of a Smith. You know, it's kind of like a family joke.
Yeah, it's close enough, right?
Yeah, Yeah, and eventually, because of, you know, all that had happened, Ireland passed a law called the Irish Diaspora Act, saying that if you had been, or your mother, father, or grandma, grandpa had been born in the Irish Republic, or when it was ruled by, you know, whether England, that you could apply for Irish citizenship. So when I heard about it, I contacted their consulate, their embassy, or whatever the hell it's called, in Chicago, and I drove up there, and I had a hell of a time because I couldn't really prove that my grandfather had, because he left illegally.
Yeah, came of course.
Illegally. I mean, I had documents showing that he arrived at the right time and such, but it wasn't until I was able to track down some of the family in Enniscorthy, Ireland, and they got some of their family and a couple members of my grandfather's IRA unit that were still alive to go to the government in Dublin and testify, saying that, yes, this man was born in Ireland, this is when he left, which made the document of when he arrived and, you know, my document showing that I was his grandson, it connected the chain. It was Irish citizenship. And I'm even without that. My heart has been in Ireland since I was a little boy. My grandfather would sing me Irish rebel songs when I was a wee baby, you know, the IRA. We'll Set Them Free, the Sam song, Bobby Sands, A Hero Martyr, stuff like that, or My Little Armalite. And we went to the Irish American festivals, because a lot of people ask, you know, when they say Americans, what are you? And we'll say Irish Americans. And other, like, Europeans will go, no, you're American. Well, you got about it. Our country has only been around for 200-something years. I'm sure that you have buildings in your hometown that are older than my country.
Yeah, so we have a cathedral from the 11th century.
We want any kind of cultural identity past 200 years. We have to go back to the lands of our ancestors. And we are very proud of it. And it shows, because almost all of the monetary support that the IRA got came from Irish Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Before Gaddafi, you know, sent all them weapons, almost all the weapons that were getting to them were coming from America. The FBI knew about it. They had an anti-IRA unit operating, but they had been penetrated. All of the head members of the anti-IRA unit, if you look at their names, are like O'Halloran, McGowan, O'Reilly, they were completely penetrated, and they were assisting the arms getting there.
Right. Interesting, considering how the IRA itself ended up being penetrated as well, so kind of the other way around.
Yeah, the IRA did have a problem with touts and being penetrated. Some of them were not. Because of the penetration, they used to work on a battalion structure, you know, large groups, so they'd have concentrated firepower.
Yeah.
They found out, we can't do this anymore. We're being too heavily penetrated. So they went to cells of 3-4 people.
Yeah.
The only one to leave or to remain in the battalion structure was the South Armagh. And that's because to become a member, you had to live there. Everybody knew everybody.
Right,
so
it right.
was possible to infiltrate them, and they actually became the most lethal IRA unit. I mean, they knocked down 7 helicopters, and their snipers were so effective that they completely stopped the Brits from patrolling. They were completely isolated in their bases. Everything had to be flown in and out, from toilet paper to mail to ammunition, by helicopters, because the IRA snipers and the mines, they had completely basically liberated the county of Armagh.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a problem. But, a lot of Americans, you know, very proud of their ethnicities.
Right. And on another issue, what's your view on illegal drugs, on the use of illegal drugs, since you have studied psychology and you were involved in programs around addiction? obviously you must acknowledge that drugs can have negative health effects on people. So what's your view on the whole thing?
Yes, I am be the first to acknowledge that drugs have negative effects on people, but you can't just use that as a blanket statement. Some drugs have less effects, some drugs have horrible effects. It shouldn't be just like a blanket ban saying that they're all bad and they're all got horrible penalties.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a good example. In the 80s, psychiatrists had rediscovered MDMA-5, which is the ecstasy.
Right.
Using it for people that had severe PTSD. See, the problem with treating it is you need to the patient to talk about it to open up.
Mm.
But patients with severe cases, when even they tried to, they would shut down. They would not. Their brain would not let them relive that event again. So by giving them the ecstasy, which just flooded them with endorphins, it allowed them to talk about what had happened without their brain trying to shut them down. And they found that they were getting remarkable results in if not curing it, but extremely reducing the effects of PTSD.
Right.
But then the word got spread that these drugs make people feel really, really good. And almost immediately, the DEA had them placed as a Schedule 1 narcotic, meaning has no medical use whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Completely illegal. I think we're seeing a tide. There's always been a tide of personal freedoms versus nanny state versus personal freedom. Before the Harrison Tax Act of 1915, any adult could go to Sears and Roebuck and buy morphine or heroin or speed and some syringes. And it was figured, hey, you're an adult. You know the consequences, and if you choose to do so, then that's your right.
Mm-hmm.
When you get all messed up, you're kind of on your own. And I don't think it should go so far as that, but, currently, places like Canada and in Europe, if you're in pain, you can go to the pharmacy, and they can give you codeine. And believe me, codeine, which is a narcotic painkiller, is a hell of a lot more effective than the max that we can get in the United States, which is ibuprofen.
Oh, so you can't get higher grade analgesics in the U.S.?
No codeine, no anything narcotic. You
right.
cannot get without a prescription. The only thing that they can sell over the counter is Tylenol, which is paracetamol, I think you call it, aspirin, and ibuprofen. So, yeah, it's become, look at me. Before I said I wasn't going to mention it, but I need to. I was engaged to be married, and she died. And I really went off the deep end, and it was bad. And a friend of mine told me, he said, I've got something here. He said that it'll help you. And it was heroin. And when he gave that to me, and I knew all the, about heroin, what it did, down to, mu receptor 5 and all that stuff. But when I took it, within 3 seconds of that injection, it filled up with this warm, warm feeling. And I had this, like a shield, like in Star Trek, a shield of love. And nobody could penetrate this shield. Not the fact that the person that I loved most had died or that, anything bad in my life. It was just blocked out from this shield for like 12 to 15 hours. And I felt wonderful. I mean, just, it was almost like a religious experience, almost. And there was a chatter in politics named Kish, and he asked me about this, and I told him, about that. And I also told him about what happens when you continue to use it. And he didn't take my advice. He went out and started using, and now he got on it pretty bad, and he had the nerve to message me the other day and say it was my fault that he had used, that I had somehow glamorized it for him, which I did no such thing. I told him the absolute unvarnished truth about the great effects that it has and about the horrible things that it does when it runs out. I mean, you got to look at it. Heroin is like a girlfriend. When you are giving her all your attention, your all of your money, she will make you feel like God is touching you. But God help you, she is a vicious bitch, and she will make your life a living hell if you don't, you know, or you can't get any. I mean, the withdrawals are just, I can't even begin to explain how horrible they are. You will do anything to make that pain stop.
Right.
But at the time, I didn't care. I was just drowning in grief, and I believe I probably would have killed myself if he hadn't come along. And I had sought mental help, you know, Prozac and all that, but I know SSRIs take 3 to 4 weeks to build up to an effective therapeutic dose. So, you know, during this time, therapy, you know, takes even longer. I don't know what I wouldn't have done, but he gave me that injection, and for the first time in a long time, I had 12 hours without horrible guilt and nightmares, and because I blame myself for her death.
Right.
I'm not responsible, but I probably could have stopped it. We were supposed to go out that evening. She's a big fan. Excuse me, she was a big fan of the 1920s swing dancing thing, mm-hmm. where you all dress up like it's the 20s and you do the big swing dance and the big bands. And we were supposed to go out that night, but I had gotten sick. And when I told her on the phone, she said, "Oh, well, forget about it. I'll come over and we'll watch a movie and I'll take care of you." And I said, "No, you can't do that." I said, "Pam, you've got lupus. If you get sick, it's going to aggravate the lupus. You're going to be very bad, and I don't want you to get sick. I know how much you wanted to go to this. Please go out and enjoy yourself tonight. I will be fine." And later that night, I get called to identify her body in the morgue.
Right.
She had gotten a ride home from a friend who had been drinking at another bar. And he hit a telephone pole, and a piece of the glass had severed her carotid artery, and she could have been saved, but the driver, being drunk, ran away and didn't call 911. Apparently, there was a 5-minute gap from when the accident happened to the first 911 call, and the worst part is that person, he should have been charged at the very least for involuntary manslaughter or negligent homicide. Turns out his daddy knew important lawyers, and that he got sentenced to 1 year in county jail, suspended, meaning no time.
Right.
5 years probation, suspended to 1 year. And a permanent license revocation suspended to a 1-year driver's license suspension. That's what he got out of it, probation and, you know, not having a license for a year.
Right.
But he's lucky he's alive. A good friend of mine, Matt, found out what I was planning to do, and he brought another good friend of mine, and they physically dragged me to the floor and held me there because I was planning to knock on the guy's door and shoot him in the face.
I see.
I'm not a violent man. I mean, I don't even hunt, really, because I can't even inflict pain on birds, but the idea that he killed the love of my life and was just going to walk away with no punishment. She had a daughter. She had a 6-year-old daughter from a previous marriage. I had to stand there with her, watching her mother in the casket. And this guy, he had taken no responsibility for it. He wasn't, you know, wrecked with grief or guilt. He was smiling in the courtroom. I just wanted to knock on that door and see him and put a bullet right between his eyes. But that's past, and I'm hoping that maybe if there's any justice in this world, he'll get smallpox or a meteor will fall on him or something.
I see.
But, yeah, the drugs, if you're an adult and you know the consequences, I believe that you should be able to buy certain illegal drugs that should be made legal. Stuff like crack, crystal meth, those should always remain illegal.
Right.
But I would be all for complete legalization of marijuana, ecstasy, magic mushrooms, LSD, for like legal, but you have to get them in a pharmacy without a prescription, which means the pharmacist can still say no. I think we should bump it up to at least Vicodin or Percocet. I'm not saying that you should be able to order morphine anymore, but, you know, I mean, I'll give you an example. Without insurance, say you've got a terrible toothache.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the pharmacy and buy a box of ibuprofen for maybe $6. You'll get ibuprofen 200s, and you'll get like 12 of them. And this might take 15 minutes. But the pain's really bad, so you decide to go to the hospital. You sit for 6 hours, and doctor comes in, gives you a prescription of ibuprofen, 800. So you got a prescription of ibuprofen 6 hours later, and you'll get a bill for $750 for the visit. Mm. And you could have just taken 4 of the ibuprofen 200 that you got over the counter that took 15 minutes that you paid $6-$7 for,
yeah,
instead of ones that you just wasted hours upon hours for and now have almost $1,000 bill.
I see.
But as long as people are educated about the consequences, I believe that they should be able to use certain drugs in a recreational setting at home. I'd be all for very, very strict penalties if they got into a car,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, something like that. It should be, you know, in the safety of your own house. You're not going out. You're,
yeah,
not going to hurt anybody else. And but a lot of people here, they say, oh, but yeah, but what are you going to do when they want to stop using? I think that the government of the state should fund rehabilitation. I mean, they should want to get people off of drugs. And currently, you know, you have to pay a lot of money to get into rehab if it's not court-ordered.
Right.
And I did an internship with a methadone maintenance clinic, and I have to say I had a negative preconception when I went there. I was there for 90 days, and before I got there, they signed out because unlike most doctor's offices, this clinic, they were all about patient confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
They put up signs saying that I was coming, what I was going to do, how that no names would be released, all the data would be in code, and that I was looking for newly arrived patients, patients that had been there a while, patients that had been there for a long time, patients that were doing well, and patients that were doing poorly.
Mm.
And I got, I think it was 20-something people signed up to give me information. And I got to follow 5 new people that had just signed up that day. And all 5 of these people, they were heavy heroin addicts. They didn't have jobs. 4 of them didn't have driver's licenses because of criminal stuff they had to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one had a license but didn't have insurance because he didn't have a job. So at the end of the 90 days when I did their final assessment, 4 of the 5 had gotten their driver's licenses. All 5 of them had gotten jobs. And 4 out of the 5 had completely stopped using illicit drugs and were using the methadone.
Right.
I weighed them and all that. Their weight had improved. And from their own physical reports, they said their mental and physical health had improved too, and in only 90 days.
Right, right. So it's effective.
The data I got is that it is a very good program, but The issue is over time. The 5-year, and it is the most effective treatment, but the 5 to 10 year data of people that go there and then stay off drugs forever, I think is about 24% are do that. So that's almost 3 out of every 4, you know, fail, but that one person does. And when people hear that, they say, oh, well, then it's a failure. But it's not, because that modality actually has the highest, you know, efficacy rate.
Right,
that
right.
Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholic Anonymous, where they command that you believe in Jesus and that you have no control and it's a higher power that you need, they have it even worse.
Right.
And tell everybody that you don't need a higher power. If you chose to use drugs, you can choose not to use drugs. Everything that you do in your life is because of what you did, your skills, your intelligence, you. Not because some, you know, magic man in the sky decided to, let's see, what do I have to do today? Should I stop the genocide in Rwanda, or should I help Tequisha not use drugs today?
Right.
I think Tequisha.
Okay, so if you'd like to say something else, you are welcome to do so or to discuss something else. Otherwise, we are probably done.
I would like to cover one last thing, and I promise it won't be as long as the others. As I said earlier, I am a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And basically, we keep our eyes and ears out for government places that are using the Establishment Clause, which says that there can't be an endorsement of religion. And this was before Christmas. A town right across the border in Pennsylvania had a nativity scene displayed. And now this wouldn't have been an issue had it been, it was because of where it was. It was on the courthouse. So they sent a letter saying, if you want it to remain on the courthouse, you have to put up something appropriate for, you know, at least 4 or 5 of the top other religions. They refused. So then the FFRF made a request that saying there was a church 20 feet to the right of the courthouse. Could they please move the nativity scene 20 feet to the right? And that the Freedom From Religion Foundation would even pay to have the it moved there. And they said, no, it's not going anywhere. So they sued, and they won. And the court said, you have to move that. So they decided to appeal, even though that all suits and appeals have always ended one way. The Freedom From Religion Foundation wins because the other side's violated the Establishment Clause. And they appeal, they lose, they got to move it out anyway. Now the city has it owes $250,000 in court and fees. And it was on this talk show, AM Radium talk show. They wanted people to call in, and you know, of course, 10 people, 20 people were calling in saying how evil atheists are, and that it's our fault that they now owe $250,000 in legal fees. So when I called up for the first time ever on radio, I thought I'd be waiting for a second, but as soon as I said that I was a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, I mean, on there like that. And I told them, I said, you know, we asked you several times. We said, put up, you know, signs of other faiths, or we would pay to move it 20 feet over to a church. But this is a government courthouse of the people to represent all people. And that there cannot be advertisement of one particular religion. It's the law. Any lawyer could have told you that you had zero chance of winning. You lost. You decided to appeal, even though you had no chance to win that. And now you're blaming us because you owe $250,000. All we wanted you to do was move it or to put up signs, which we would have paid for.
Right.
There must have been 50 people that called up after me, hate mail, saying I was Satan's slave, I was doing the devil's work, begging Van Rivers to give them my address so they could come and beat me back to the Lord. I mean, some really nasty stuff. So it makes me think, what stuff did he not put on the air if he put these crackpots on? And then in the last part of this, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has a newsletter called Free Thought Today. And they had an article about what's going on in a place called Jackson, Ohio. There is Jackson Middle School that has this giant portrait of Jesus in the main entranceway. Well, one of the kids there told his father that he didn't like it. So they contacted the FFRF and the ACLU, and they filed suit with, I forget what it's called, you're suing them, but you want a motion hearing to go forward first before you put down who is suing it so that they can become John Doe's for protection.
I see.
And, so they argued that because of all the horrible things that have happened to people that have stood up against religious icons, like the Hall case where they firebombed his family's house, killing his children, they granted the kid John Doe 1 and his father John Doe 2. Well, somehow it leaked out from the courthouse that they were suing to have this Jesus poster or portrait removed. They came home one day and they found that their pet dog had been beheaded.
Right.
It was a sign saying, "This is you, you Satan-worshipping tool." And this is why I support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. These people are dangerous extremists, and they need to be challenged every single time they try and bring religion into government. Because who could break into someone's house, cut a dog's head off, and then claim that you did it in the name of the Lord?
Hmm.
I mean, it's sickening. And I don't know if that makes me crazy, but I wish I could be there in Jackson to stand with that family, holding up signs or whatever, or maybe even saying, "Here, you know, we'll stand outside your property at night with the shotgun."
Right.
I could be there to help in any way, because a lot of these people, they get so intimidated that they drop their case.
Yeah. It seems like a potentially dangerous course of action to into these cases.
I mean, do you have specific laws that say one religion can't be used over another, or is Catholicism?
Yeah, we have an article in the Constitution establishing freedom of conscience and of belief, explicitly stating that people cannot be forced to state which religious beliefs they hold. That religion of the freedom of religion includes the freedom not to hold any religion. But it's a bit more complicated in our case because it also indicates that due to the social import of the Catholic Church in Spain, the state shall enter into the appropriate relations with it in order to reach the legal agreements that are necessary for things like marriage recognition and stuff like that. Nonetheless, generally speaking, religion is not present in our political life. Definitely not in our courts or in our universities. Occasionally in schools, though, there is recent European Court of Human Rights doctrine on this, saying that it's contrary to law. But generally, even in the cases of where this law is not kept and people, you know, will have religious imagery in public buildings, those who protest against it can do so in the knowledge that religious people will just think, "Oh, you know, you are taking things out of proportion or being silly," but they won't be attacked in the way that you are describing.
So atheists aren't reviled, hated, and attacked in Spain?
No, not to that extent.
Well, they actually did a popularity poll here, and it comes out that Muslims suspected of extremism are more well-liked than atheists.
Right.
And a lot of states used to have requirements saying that you had to swear your belief in God before you could take your elected seat in their, you know, state legislature or state senate or whatever, you know, such like that.
Yeah.
But on the final note, that when I was in the Army, I was on it's a point system for where you've served, how long you've served, till you get enough points that you become eligible for promotion. And I was climbing it pretty fast to become captain. And I got called in by my commanding officer, and he told me, he said, basically, he goes, "Lieutenant Smith, you need to shut your mouth about this whole atheism bullshit. You know, it's bad enough that I have a soldier under my command who does not believe in our kind and loving Jesus Christ, who is our Lord and God." But, you know, they said that by somehow not being religious, that it would affect the men under my command's ability to bond with me and therefore respect my orders.
Right.
That's how, by not being Christian, they couldn't bond with me, and they couldn't respect me. And I told them, I said, "We were told from day one that you respect and obey the rank, not the man. They cannot abide my religion. They will abide my rank." And the captain said, "That may be true, but you'll be holding that one rank for the rest of your career if you do not keep your mouth shut." Because at the time, I had been passing out an article we had put together, some other people at Fort Bragg, called "Atheists in Foxholes,"
mm-hmm.
and I was the only one that put, you know, my name on it as chief editor.
Right.
I discontinued putting my name on it, and I let somebody else who had been part of it, writing it anonymously. I let them take over the editing duties, and I wrote articles, you know, with the pseudonym, but never really got to the test because I got hurt shortly before it would have come up anyway, before I would have been promoted to captain.
Right.
But that was always, that really bothered me, that, or the fact that I had to, excuse me, 5 times I had to send my dog tags back because I asked for "atheist." And they would come back Christian,
mm-hmm.
no preference, agnostic, Christian.
Right.
And when I went back the fifth time, excuse me, I need some water here.
Go ahead.
When I went back the fifth time, the guy, he's like, "What the heck do you want more? What's more important, your blood type or your religion? You're atheist. What do you care? You know, I'd rather have the blood than a non-existent chaplain praying non-existent prayers." And I said, "It's the principle of the issue."
Right, I see.
But, you know, it's not all like that. There are, like I said, liberals and atheists and that. And it takes all kinds of people for, you know, it's just, it seems to be top-heavy at the very high officer ranks and the very high NCO sergeant ranks, conservative, hate gays. They despise the "don't ask, don't tell." And I can't tell you how happy I am that they ended that and allowing gays to serve openly.
Mm-hmm.
And they just announced that they're letting women pick dedicated combat roles. Because they had been cheating before. They would let women take certain roles that weren't dedicated combat roles, but would put them in combat nonetheless, regardless, 99% of the time.
Right.
But they couldn't get the extra money for being combat unit. So, you know, there are a lot of good changes going on in the military, although they are screaming bloody murder about the sequestration cuts and the cuts into their funding.
Mm.
I mean, they scream bloody murder every time that they talk about cutting the budget. And since we're leaving Afghanistan and all of our combat troops are out of Iraq, I hate to say it, but the United States Army is primed for a massive budget cut.
Right.
I mean, we spent all this money on the military, and we should be winding them down now. Cuts in the Army, and, you know, the only two branches that should either stay the same or maybe get a little more from what we've taken from the other branches would be the Air Force and the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
they're our protective shield. The army is basically only good for coming in and invading other countries, and I don't see us doing that in the next 10 years.
Right. Hopefully. Yeah. Okay. So thanks for your time, and it's been good to talk to you and to find out what you sound like in reality. And
say thank you for the opportunity to interview me. I enjoyed it very much, and I don't know what the policy is on re-interviews, but if that ever comes up, I'd like to volunteer because I really enjoyed this, and you're a good interviewer.
Thanks. At present, we're trying to get a good cover of regulars before we interview other people, but it may come up in the future, so I'll keep you posted. So, good evening, then.
Adios, camarada.
Adios.